One of the narrators of Bad River is a young woman with a well-known face in the land rights movement and in the fashion industry. Her name is Quanah Rose Chasing Horse. Raised in Eagle Village, Alaska, she's Hanguich-In on her mother's side and Ogallala Lakota on her dad's side. Quanah's in her early 20s, so she represents the next generation of activists working to protect Native lands. What is unusual is to combine that with a career as a high-profile supermodel. So when I was getting ready to talk with her, I was really struck by a cover shoot she did for a National Geographic issue on Native sovereignty, because it kind of epitomizes the two worlds she walks in. So in the picture, you're wearing this black parka with a furry hood and this really beautiful skirt that has images of Native children. And you are standing in front of this iconic stone monument that we've all seen. You're staring straight into the camera. And there's a look in your eyes that I keep thinking about, but I can't quite describe it. This must have been, you know, the end of a day. You're really steeped in this landscape and the stories of the people who've been living there. What were you thinking about?
Honestly, I think it was really just my ancestors that was speaking through me. If you really look at the image, I think that's why people, I've gotten that a lot, actually. I've gotten a lot of people being like, when I look at this image and I look into your eyes, it's hard for me to actually pinpoint what exactly is coming through me, but I feel it. I feel this energy. And for me, like in that moment when we were there shooting that, I genuinely felt the presence of not just my ancestors, but of my little brother and his lineage and their ancestors there, because it really just does speak to what we're trying to push through with this story. The vision and how we see ourselves and see the land and how we are able to recognize that we aren't separate from the land. We're not above the land. We're not below the land. We're not above nature. We're not below nature. We are in nature. And I think in that moment, I just kind of embodied that. And I felt my ancestors kind of looking through me. It really felt so, so grounding. And yeah, we were able to tell an amazing story with that. Yeah.
Will you tell me something about the place where you grew up? In Alaska, because you were lucky enough to grow up with this strong connection to indigenous lands and sacred places. And the way your mom raised you, from what I've read, in a traditional way. I'm just wondering what that meant, what that looked like in practice for you growing up.
Yeah. My mom, she raised me and my brothers as a single parent. And at first, we were homeless. My mom really struggled trying to provide for me and my brothers, but she was able to, and she did it all by herself. Being raised really close to the land, we lived out in the bush. We lived in a log cabin, and my mom had a dog team.
Wow.
I grew up dog mushing. I grew up hunting and fishing because we didn't really have the money to go to the store. The one or two stores that were like miles and miles away, yet they were the closest stores to us. They were pretty expensive just because it's hard to get food shipments all the way out there.
What kind of hunting and fishing?
Caribou hunting, moose hunting, fishing for salmon.
You've hunted caribou and moose?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I was really raised within our cultural traditional way of life. I think my mom really made sure that me and my brothers had a healthy relationship with the land and the animals, because as a society, as a people, as humans, forget that we are a part of this life cycle. And that when you're living out in the bush of Alaska, it's survival. And it really was like that for me and my brothers. I mean, when my mom, you know, there were nights we were afraid that she wasn't going to come home because she had a really dangerous job. And so me and my brothers, she taught us how to cook, how to clean, how to take care of each other. She always made sure that we had the skills to survive in this world and not just in our traditional way of life and lands out in Alaska, but she made sure that we can also, I would say, like, show up and proceed and perform in today's society outside of the bush of Alaska in the city. So she really made sure that we had a balance and we understood both worlds. But yeah, walking two worlds, it can be tricky, but once you have a great community around you, it makes it a lot easier.
Which, in my mind, it just brings me back to thinking about you as a fashion model, which in some ways seems so anomalous, given everything that we've been talking about, your deep connection to and love for the land, and then modeling.
Yeah.
Which feels, I guess rather than me saying anything, I should just ask, how do those connect for you? Do you see part of your mission as redefining beauty?
Yes, I think one of the biggest things in fashion is redefining beauty in that way of breaking down those barriers, because that's the biggest thing about fashion is a lot of people don't even realize that Native people were so fashionable. Mm-hmm. Every tribe had different regalia, had different hairstyles, had different ways that they would show up in different communities. Like in Alaska, the messengers, the people that were sent to go trade with other Native communities, they would stop about a mile before they reach the next village, and they'll dress up their dogs even. Hmm. A lot of the dogs had outfits. The dogs were decked out and really nice, drenched in Native drip. You know what I mean? Like they really wanted to show up and show out because we are proud of who we are and where we come from. We're proud of our beauty. And I think when we're able to reclaim that and show the world that we're not a monolith, that each tribe had their own sense of style, had their own sense of fashion, but also our languages are beautiful. Our songs are beautiful. The way that we communicate with each other, even if we don't understand each other, is beautiful. And because it's beautiful, we love it.
Also, the traditional tattoos that you wear, I mean, that's a tradition that goes back generations and generations, hundreds of years, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we've been doing this since time immemorial. I mean, our tattoos are one of the most sacred practices that we have, and that identifies who we are. Those kinds of traditions and teachings were stolen from us and erased. Genocidal tactics, it was to take everything that made us who we are away from us. And I think for over a century, no one in our tribe practiced tattooing for over a century.
Wow.
Me and my mom did a lot of research and talked with elders. And I was the first girl, the youngest, to get it that young. I got my first one when I was 14, and I've experienced a lot of discrimination and a lot of just ignorance around it. There's so many things that go into that, but in my modeling career, no one, not a single person, is allowed to ask me to cover my tattoos. I remember one time the stylist, he worked with me on one of my first shoots. He was like not a fan of my markings. And he made it known, and it made me feel very weird about it. But I was like, whatever, he's obviously ignorant. He doesn't know anything about this. And then I saw him the next time, and I had added onto my markings. And he saw that I added to them, and he was like, did you add more? And I was like, yeah, I did. Don't add any more. He thought he had the authority to tell me, an Indigenous woman, to not get any more facial markings. And I definitely would say my traditional tattoos play a huge role in reclaiming of identity and showing up and being unapologetic and authentic in who I am and not compromising for anyone. Do not have any colonizer tell you that you can or cannot get something that is relating to you, your people, and your culture. Reclaim that power and don't let that affect you, because you're showing up authentic as who you are, and that's how it should be. It's powerful, you know, and it shows young girls and the youth and future generations that we are beautiful, that these markings are beautiful, that we should celebrate them and celebrate each other when we receive them. It's a beautiful, beautiful practice, and it's so such an honor and a blessing to be a part of that space when you're there witnessing someone getting their marking.
Kwana Chasing Horse is Hanguich Inn and Ogallala Lakota. She was raised in Eagle Village, Alaska. Keep your eyes open for a new documentary about her life called Walking Two Worlds. And by the way, all the music in this hour was composed by Native musicians. This piece is from Matawayuhi, composer for the award-winning TV show Reservation Dogs, and a member of the Lakota tribe.
Live from the shell of a turtle by the snap. Quail tail, broke spells, jump hurdles, where we at? Wish me well on the journey, might burn a might splat. Pop said you gon' learn how to earn a stripe. Stick into your pathways, pitter patter with the wind as it brush the grass strains. Revel in the river for a minute downstream with the fins. No means to an end, brown, green colors got it at the mud. Flooded in front line, give a whoop out of wind. That's the sound of the cavalry. I don't keep it sweet, foul mouth, no ounce of a cavity. Just cause you mad with yourself, don't get mad at me.
To hear more of Mata Waiuhi and other Native artists we're featuring this hour, visit our website, ttbook.org. And while you're there, check out Quanah Chasing Horse's photos from National Geographic.